While you're taking care of aging family members, who is taking care of you? Hi, everyone. I'm Kathy Poholsky. Welcome to The Art of Aging, a 20-minute podcast to encourage independence and peace of mind by informing, educating, and celebrating you. A conversation with Michelle Magner in just 30 seconds. First, your AOA tip of the day. When budgeting for a loved one in a senior living community, don't forget to include things outside of room and board. Professional fees, insurance premiums, medical equipment, pharmaceuticals, undergarments, nutrition shakes, clothing, toiletries, charitable contributions, hobbies, entertainment, and favorite snacks. Even if he or she doesn't need some of them now, they may later. Considering the possibility could help ensure their independence and your peace of mind. Now back to our topic, inspired caring. Joining me to talk more about it is Michelle Magner. Michelle is a business owner, certified coach, and has earned a master's certificate in gerontology. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me today. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Hey, how would you describe the aging population?
I would describe the aging population as confused. And I would describe it that way because most of us are pretty confused that our chronological age is what it is. Like, we are in a little bit of a place of denial, but I think that as we are navigating throughout our day, most of us just don't feel the age that we are.
Oh my goodness. Okay. And with that, and the idea that people's circumstances will change, comes this whole idea that a family member could turn caregiver. So who is most likely to assume that role and why?
The most likely person to assume that role would be the daughter in the family, or if there is only a son in the family, it's more likely going to be his wife. So make sure you get along with your in-laws because there's a good chance at some point they will become your caregiver.
Okay, and I like what you said there. At some point, nobody really knows, right? So paint a picture, Michelle, of an individual who has caregiving on the horizon. What is their life like?
Well, I'll just use my own family as an example, if that's okay with you. My mother-in-law in 2016 received a frontotemporal dementia diagnosis. And at the time, we had some denial within the family about just the state of affairs and what the future could bring. My father-in-law was her primary family caregiver, which basically meant they hung out at home, watched TV, prepared meals, and occasionally went out, but their world just began to shrink a little bit year after year. And then ultimately, he received a cancer diagnosis that was terminal. So we found ourselves in a situation where the person who was providing the care, the spouse, ended up actually needing care himself. So that's when this next generation, most of us are middle-aged kids, stepped in so that we could help both of them as they navigated their different diagnoses.
I want you to talk about the psychological component in all of this because I think one thing we really need to make sure that people understand is very rarely do you know when something like this is going to happen. So you get the news. Now you're emotionally starting to check out because, to your point, there's denial and other things involved there. And so if we're not thinking clearly and then we're expected to navigate an already complicated system, what does that mean? I mean, talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I found that not wanting to accept a diagnosis was our first baseline problem that we found or situation we found ourselves in. When my mother-in-law received her diagnosis, my father-in-law really struggled to wrap his head around it. And so denial was his psychological defense mechanism that we're just not going to worry about it. And not have to plan, really. Now, lucky for us, Kathy, they had actually taken some measures in their earlier years to buy long-term care insurance. So they did have some planning in place, but really we had a four-year window where she was on this decline. And the psychological piece of it was both of them were really, really struggling because instead of receiving help, seeking resources, seeking support services, they just closed themselves into their little world.
Well, then I guess the next question would be to talk about how isolation plays into the aging process.
Oh my gosh. And isolation, we know, has such significant health impacts. It's the equivalent of 6 alcoholic beverages a day and 15 cigarettes a day, that social isolation and feeling of loneliness. So when people, we are pack creatures, right? Humans need other humans around us. And when we have a diagnosis like this, oftentimes we feel like we're on an island. We think we're the only ones that are going through this or have this situation. I remember with my father-in-law when he received his diagnosis, and they told us pretty early on, we're looking at about 3 years, I had just completed my research on gratitude for my practicum, and I started texting my father-in-law, tell me 3 things you're feeling grateful for today. And he participated for about 4 days. And then he said, I'm on to you and I'm not doing this. So here I was thinking, we're not going to seek external support or resources. Here I am studying aging. Let me just see if maybe we can engage in this manner. And he shut me down. So it was pretty tough. But I'll tell you that I think part of my frustration is that his own health really took a turn because he was so concerned about taking care of her, mm-hmm. that he was ignoring some warning signs that he was having with his own health. And so the week that he was actually actively beginning to transition into dying, he asked me if they were there, my cautionary tale. And we laughed. We did laugh about it. But I said a little bit, yes, because as family caregivers and care providers, isolating yourself, not engaging with other people, not taking care of yourself can really have dire consequences.
Well, and you speak from professional experience, but Michelle, also from personal experience, you yourself have been a caregiver, are a caregiver. So before we go into your professional journey, talk with our listeners about Michelle, the caregiver.
Right. So age 28 years old, I found myself in this role as primary family caregiver. You know, culturally, we've all spread out geographically. So typically, you find that there's one person in the family that the brunt of the responsibility falls onto their shoulders. And so for me, that in my family, that was me. And quite frankly, it was a privilege for me to be on that journey with both of my grandmothers over 7 years. So age 28 to 36, 37, I'm growing my family and I was responsible for everything. No more driving, time to move out of your house, all of the medical, financial journey. And then of course, we began to backfill in a secondary caregiver role for my mother-in-law. And then stepped into primary for both my father-in-law, and then he is now passed, so we're taking care of my mother-in-law, who lives in a beautiful senior living community in the Omaha area. But it's heavy lifting, it's very emotional, and really managing your mindset, your thought processes, having the information and resources you need are so important as you venture on this journey.
Let me ask you, especially for those people who are just starting this journey now, hindsight's always 20/20.
Yes.
When you look back at all of your years as a caregiver, is there something that sticks out that you wish you had known that you didn't know that would have made that journey maybe not easier, but a little bit more feasible or bearable?
It is such an emotional roller coaster, and when you have multiple people involved and there can really be some intense family dynamics, I wish I would have gotten to the baseline of my 3 core values sooner. And how that has played a role as I proceed now is that I know what triggers me. I know what upsets me. So A, I can either avoid a situation or a potential encounter that may send me over the edge, or B, I'm able to navigate those so much smoother. To be transparent with you, my brother-in-law, as the oldest son, really felt like it was his responsibility to step into this role to care for his parents. I had this industry background and prior caregiving experience, so we were starting to butt heads a little bit. What I realized was what was important to me was really having connection with him, and that I had belief and faith in the outcomes that we were going to be okay, and that integrity-wise, we were both operating from doing the best we can. So just knowing that, I was able to stand down a little bit, Kathy, not have my ego so puffed up. He was able to stand down a little bit and realize that I had something to contribute. So helpful.
Wow, very, very good advice. And you did go into senior living. Talk about that and the why you wound up doing that.
Well, it's so interesting. I initially thought I was working in senior living just generally because I love our elderly. I loved being there. I loved being around all of this wisdom and knowledge and connected very well with our elderly population. And so it just felt very organic. And my peer group all thought it was a little odd. And so their thought was like, you are so comfortable in this space. So maybe that's a career for you. So I entered the career under that premise. And then as I was in that environment studying gerontology, what I really realized in senior living, the reason I was there was I wanted to know the people in the buildings loved my grandmothers as much as I did. And it was so evident. It was so evident and clear to me that, that love was present there, that that was my why to be in senior living.
Okay, very cool. So in a nutshell, you get it, right? Mm-hmm. So what would you share to be the first step that people should take in this time of change or challenge for them? What is rule number one or suggestion number one?
Rule number one is you want to start to build an awareness about what is working and what is not working. And we don't want to come at it from an accusatory, inflammatory, angry place. We want to look at what the current situation is and start to take note of, maybe they're eating more peanut butter and crackers than I realize. Maybe the yard work isn't being handled as well as it used to be. And that is not an opportunity to engage in a fight. We're just observing. We're just starting to take note. Maybe where are there areas of opportunity where there's more help that they didn't used to need that they now need?
Okay, thank you. On your website, you talk about the three C's.
Yes.
What are those?
Calmness, clarity, and confidence. When your body, your nervous system is in a fight or flight or freeze space, it makes it very difficult as you are trying to help your aging loved one navigate this chapter. So if they have a hospital visit, for example, and maybe there is a new diagnosis, you want to be as calm as possible in these situations. It's an emotional time, and I do understand that. But your goal is to remain as calm as possible so that you can begin to make decisions. Clarity, collect the information, gather the information, start to tap into the resources within the community. There are so many resources available to help people navigate this chapter of their life. So really being clear on what the issues are and where could you maybe start to backfill some help is a very good idea. And then confidence. Oh my gosh, Kathy, so many people lay their head on their pillow at night feeling guilty, feeling frustrated or upset or second guessing themselves. And really what I hope is that we can have some confidence in the decisions that we're making, and then have our back on those decisions. Because having confidence will just spill out and spill over at every stage.
Well, and here's the beauty of all of this. If folks are liking and appreciating what is being said here today, Michelle, you have a 12-week inspired caring group. So basically, you've kind of laid the foundation for us in terms of where you're coming from. Now people could actually engage in something that would be supportive of what they're doing or trying to do. Talk about that.
Absolutely. So what I have discovered, and really it was through these many, many years as a family care partner, caregiver, and through those years of experience working in senior living with so many families, is that we really will find value in enhancing our mindset, having the mindset tools that we need to navigate this time. So our first 6 weeks in that program, we're just focused on what our thoughts are, our values, our expectations. We have a lot of expectations about our loved one, ourselves, our family members. So we're focusing on our mindset for that first 6 weeks. The second 6 weeks, we're really going to focus on you. Because in this process, no one else is really taking care of you. You're pouring everything you have into this other person. So we're going to talk about boundaries. How do we identify some boundaries that need to be set? And what are the boundaries you need for yourself to care for yourself? We're going to talk about optional resources in the community. Every city across America has an area office on aging. So that would be a great example of a resource for people. So everything that you need to really take care of yourself is in that second 6 weeks.
Okay. What type of feedback are you getting from the participants? Because I would imagine there's a little bit of reluctancy to get involved in something like this, because I would imagine, first of all, I, quote, don't have time for that. I'm too busy being pulled in so many different directions. But when they're done, what type of feedback are they giving you?
The first thing people say is, I thought I was the only one going through this or having this specific experience. And I will tell you, by week 3 or 4, people are feeling so much calmer about their situation and so much more prepared for what could potentially be to come. And really, most people that I work with love a list and a plan. And so when they have those things, that really takes down their stress and anxiety level. So across the board, when people are engaging with this work, they are feeling calmer and having more confidence and just feel so much clearer about whatever next step it is that they need.
Well, and you gotta love this, Michelle, because you got this all started. You're the person driving it. The other benefit I could see in something like that is now these people are equipped to go out and help others learn how to help themselves in the situations, right?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look around at your peer group, the people, most of us who are in this 45 to 65 range, are helping aging family members. And so once you have this information, you can share it with your loved one or your friends or your other family members. So absolutely, we're all in this boat together. Nobody is alone.
So how do people reach you?
They can go to my website, which is www.michellemagner.com. Michelle only has one L in it. It might have been a mistake. We don't know, but it does only have one L in it. So it's MICHELEMAGNER.
Great. In about the 30 seconds we have remaining, final thoughts.
My final thoughts are, you really are not alone, and you really can do this. And there is potential here for you to thrive during this chapter and feel connected and engaged and supporting your loved one while also managing your life, your world, your responsibilities.
Wonderful. I'd like to thank Michelle for joining us. Adaptive advice for the use of their space. My husband, Mike, for making us sound so good. And of course, to all of you for listening to The Art of Aging, a podcast to encourage independence and peace of mind by informing, educating, and celebrating you. I'm Kathy Poholsky, inviting you to join us again as we'll be posting new segments every 2 weeks. Till then, may you find meaning in each and every moment, hence discovering what I believe to be the true art of aging.